Coming back to your native land after an absence of many years is a surprisingly unsettling business, a little like waking from a long coma. Time, you discover, has wrought changes that leave you feeling mildly foolish and out of touch. You proffer hopelessly inadequate sums when making small purchases. You puzzle over ATM machines and automated gas pumps and payphones, and are astounded to discover, by means of a stern grip on your elbow, that gas station roadmaps are no longer free. In my case, the problem was intensified by the fact that I had left as a youth and was returning in middle age. All those things that you do as an adult, take out mortgages, have children, accumulate pension plans, take an interest in the state of your guttering, I had only ever done in England. Things like furnaces and storm windows were, in an American context, the preserve of my father. So finding myself suddenly in charge of an old New England house, with its mysterious pipes and thermostats, its temperamental garbage disposal and life-threatening automatic garage door, was both unnerving and rather exhilarating. It is disconcerting to find yourself so simultaneously in your element and out of it. I can enumerate all manner of minutiae that mark me out as an American. Which of the 50 states has a unicameral legislature? What a squeeze play is in baseball? Who played Captain Kangaroo on TV? I even know about 2/3 of the words to the Star Spangled Banner, which is more than some people who have sung it publicly. But send me to the hardware store, and even now I am totally lost. For months I had conversations with the clerk at our local True Value that went something like this. "Hi, I need some of that goopy stuff you fill nail holes in walls with. My wife's people call it polyfilla." "Ah, you mean spackle." "Very possibly. And I need some of those little plastic things that you use to hold screws in the wall when you put shelves up. I know them as raw plugs, or we call them anchors." "I shall make a mental note of it." Really, I could hardly have felt more foreign if I had stood there dressed in lederhosen. All this was a shock to me. Although I was always very happy in Britain, I never stopped thinking of America as home, in the fundamental sense of the term. It was where I came from, what I really understood, the base against which all else was measured. In a funny way, nothing makes you feel more like a native of your own country than to live where nearly everyone is not. For 20 years, being an American was my defining quality. It was how I was identified, differentiated. I even got a job on the strength of it once when, in a moment of youthful audacity, I asserted to a managing editor of the London Times that I would be the only person on his staff who could reliably spell Cincinnati. And it was so. Happily, there is a flip side to this. The many good things about America also took on a bewitching air of novelty. I was as dazzled as any newcomer by the famous ease and convenience of daily life, the giddying abundance of absolutely everything, the boundless friendliness of strangers, the wondrous, unfillable vastness of an American basement, the delight of encountering waitresses and other service providers who actually seemed to enjoy their work, the curiously giddying notion that ice is not a luxury item, and that rooms can have more than one electrical socket. As well, there has been the constant, unexpected joy of re-encountering all those things I grew up with but had largely forgotten. Baseball on the radio, the deeply satisfying whang-bang slam of a screen door in summer, insects that glow, sudden run-for-your-life thunderstorms, really big snowfalls, Thanksgiving and the 4th of July, the smell of a skunk from just the distance that you have to sniff the air quizzically and say, "Is that a skunk?" Jello with stuff in it, the pleasingly comical sight of oneself in shorts. All that counts for a lot in a strange way. So on balance, I was wrong. You can go home again. Just bring extra money for roadmaps and remember to ask for spackle. Mail call. One of the pleasures of living in a small, old-fashioned New England town is that it generally includes a small, old-fashioned post office. Ours is particularly agreeable. It's in an attractive federal-style brick building, confident but not flashy, that looks like a post office ought to. It even smells nice, a combination of gum adhesive and old central heating turned up a little too high.